want to build a community and share other women's stories.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Tea with TE, She Who Leads podcast. Today, I'm extra excited. We have a very special guest with us, somebody that knows TE very well, and somebody that I've had the pleasure of getting to know over the past few weeks. We have Sophie Dabbs, who is the managing partner of Tone Solutions and the CEO of Tompkins Venture. Sophie, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Terry. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
We're very excited. And I know that we will probably talk a lot during this session because I think we've both got lots that we align on and that we share values on from a talking perspective. But for the sake of everybody who doesn't know you, if you don't mind just sharing a bit of information on who you are and a bit on background, that's a great place for us to start.
Sure. Well, thank you for the invitation today. I am currently managing partner of Tone Solutions, founder of Tone Solutions, and CEO of Tompkins Leadership. And so how did I get to this spot? With a quick look on my LinkedIn background, you can see that I had a long path through what I'll call corporate. Mm-hmm. Large organizations, companies that are now public, companies that I've helped build and go through private equity events. I've worked in startup environments in New York City. And really through that whole time, I have had a passion for people. My energy has been spent in my day job has been spent on go-to-market strategies and sales organizations and solution design. And all along I was working with people. And so at some point, I decided, hey, people is how I do things.
Yeah.
It is. They are. Mm-hmm. And I started investing in the tools. I invested in coach training. I invested in learning different tools and psychometric tests to help as I guided folks on my team when I was in corporate. Mm-hmm. And then, as we talked already, I went through a time, especially after COVID, where I was just experiencing a ton of burnout and said, okay, what do I need to do differently in my life and still be of service and yeah. still have fun and still conquer the world because that's what we do.
Yeah.
And so I decided to step out of corporate and I happened to, realign with my current, my business partner, John Richardson. We had worked together for about a decade and we said, hey, we were great partners then. Let's get together and see what's going to happen in the future. And so he focuses on supply chain and analytics and I focus on people and strategy. And these two things beautifully overlap in process and in change management. And along the way, I met a gentleman named Jim Tompkins. Now, Jim is a scholar and a gentleman, and he has built billion-dollar companies. And around COVID timeframe, he started Tompkins Ventures. And he is still leading Tompkins Ventures at the helm every single day. And John and I happened to have the opportunity to work on a few projects with him over the years. And he called me one day and he said, you know, I have a leadership practice. Why don't we talk about doing that together? And so recently, I have become CEO of Tompkins Leadership, which is an advisory practice, a consulting practice that focuses on the people of supply chain and logistics globally. And so I may work with founders, I may work with supply chain teams, and the people around me may do the same things. And many of us actually have not just a people background, but a deep knowledge of a particular area in the supply chain or in growing a company. So we have a little different approach, a little mm-hmm. non-traditional approach. So I have been trained classically as a coach, an yeah. inquiry-based coach. But I found sometimes people want you to tell them where they need to look.
Yeah.
And so we have a little different approach to people and to business. And that's been really successful for us.
Mm-hmm. Can you share a little bit more on that? Because I do think it is quite different in terms of how you proposition, and particularly kind of thinking not just about individuals, but also the business and what the goals are for the teams that you support. And I think I've not really come across that in mm-hmm. my field. And I come across a lot of coaches, and there's a lot of execs that we work with that have some kind of leadership capability in what they do. But it's definitely different at Tompkins Ventures. So I'd love to just hear a bit more.
So one of the first things that I've learned about the value proposition for coaching in the industry that I am in is that people hear coaching and they think, oh my God, I'm going to have to talk about my feelings. run away. We don't need coaching here. And while we do talk about feelings, I don't go in talking about that. We go in and we talk about EBITDA and working capital and go-to-market strategies and process and change management and all the tactical things that people are comfortable with. We talk about alignment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting in a room with people and they think they're aligned. So Terry, tell me what this means to you. And Sophie, tell me what that means to you. And we both say what we think, and we nod our heads, and we say something that is completely different. But everyone's like, yes, yes, mm-hmm. yes. Well, Terry and Sophie are going down two different paths. Being able to help companies go,
mm-hmm.
they like each other, but they do not agree.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about areas where they might agree and they might align. And let's talk about the areas that they don't and why. And approaching people with that eye for the bias that exists within an organization. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If this is a strong team that likes each other and we all want to get along, great. And also that means we might not want to ruffle the feathers, Terry and Sophie. Yeah. They get along. Let's keep it that way. Okay. But then 6 months down the road, when Terry's mm-hmm. doing one thing and Sophie's doing the other, then they don't like each other.
Yeah.
Then we wasted time. And then we spent money.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's an actual problem, not just a minorly uncomfortable conversation that might not even be uncomfortable. And so having the courage to do that is not what I teach. I don't mm-hmm. teach it. I model it. I make it okay to mm-hmm. ask those questions, to clarify.
Yeah.
And sometimes people just need help seeing, oh, that was easy. That was a 3-minute conversation and now they actually are aligned.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it does take a person who is outside of the group, or is somebody that's coming in externally, who can say, okay, let's talk about this and actually what's on your feelings. I think it's a scary thought sometimes for people to actually feel like, oh gosh, do I feel like I can say that? Or am I approaching it in the right way? So I think you are helping to, or even they, like you say, they might not even realize that they are misaligned. They probably think, oh, okay, yeah, we're both doing, like you say, doing the same thing.
That is one of the biggest challenges, is you really, really believe you're aligned. You believe everyone knows what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime I hear that, I always like, okay, let's test that theory.
Yeah. Tell me how.
How do you know? Is mm-hmm. a question I ask all the time. And also, and here's a trick, you know, as we mm-hmm. talk about how do you actually take things like this out in the world, asking very fact-based questions.
Mm-hmm.
Things about numbers and metrics and EBITDA and what, you know, sales numbers and how do you know, and is it going in the upward right direction? All those questions. And then ask something that is more subjective.
Okay.
What do you think is going to happen? Why?
Mm-hmm.
And it could be in an open meeting.
Mm-hmm.
It could be one-on-one. That's where you will get a real sense of what people believe
mm-hmm.
and what the challenges could be.
Yeah, interesting. It's crazy how just little things like that, like the way in which you're framing a question, can actually really help with opening somebody up as well, I think, right?
Yeah, and truly, that's a mechanical way. Ask a few objective
mm-hmm.
questions and ask something subjective. Terry, you have to actually care as a leader,
mm-hmm.
because people can tell if you're just trying to get information from
mm-hmm.
them. And it's a completely different conversation.
Yeah.
If you're curious, if
mm-hmm.
they actually care, if they believe that, if they tell you something that might be a little bit contrary to what they think you want
mm-hmm.
to do, and you're going to do something wise with it, and sometimes doing something with it is not doing anything at all, it's holding it for them, you get completely different conversations that allow you as the leader, forget anyone coming in from a third party perspective, but them too, it helps you as the leader figure out how to get the team aligned faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I know everybody wants. I think we all want things yesterday. You talked a little bit about it actually when we last spoke, and I'll touch upon this briefly because I know that this, you just mentioned their burnout, and you also mentioned time. And we talked about 4,000 weeks as a book. And I'm halfway through and it is crazy. But do you want to just share a bit around that and kind of where you got to with your thinking?
Sure. So I told you my thinking was probably the beginning of 2022.
Mm-hmm.
I was in burnout.
Mm-hmm.
I was working for a company. We had gone through a private equity event, and then COVID hit. And everything that ensued through COVID, I then left that company and went into a startup space. COVID is still occurring at this time. We're still trying to figure that out. And got into that company with this amazing team that I got to build and help scale that organization. And I realized, traveling a lot, and you can see my video screen here, I was looking at myself 10 hours a day. On a cube like this.
Not again.
I felt like my body was becoming a board as I was sitting here. And you know, I started the year. I was like, okay, so how do I lift myself up? What do I
mm-hmm.
do? And I came across this book, 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals. It's written by a gentleman named Oliver Berkman.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how I came across this book. And honestly, I think who knows what I was reading? I could have been told to organize my desk in a different way, and whatever can help me right now, I will do it. And I realized very quickly in the first probably 10 pages of the book,
mm-hmm.
also listen to it, which the orator is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
4,000 weeks. That is the average human lifespan. 77 years. And so, of course, everyone who does the math, I'm sure your listeners are doing
mm-hmm.
15. Well, how many weeks is that? And I was like, oh, well, I am well over the halfway mark. And the point of the book is that time is precious.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certainly a lot of choices that you can make in your life about how you're spending your time. And that really sunk in.
Mm-hmm.
And by about 6 months later, I had left corporate and decided to go out on my own.
Yeah. Great that it reframed your mind. I think sometimes we need a bit of perspective to step out a little bit. I mean, COVID was just so difficult for everyone, I think, in terms of that. That's why the great resignation came, right? Where everybody just thought, oh my gosh, what am I doing? and left and went and did something completely different, which obviously difficult times came from and brought new beginnings. But here you are in your role today. But thinking about corporate and thinking about the industries that you have been in, you talked about at the beginning, obviously logistics, supply chain, generally speaking, and not to stereotype, but that is typically quite a male-dominated industry.
Yes.
You've been in quite senior roles in during those times. So would love to hear kind of how that career shaped you as a female and any lessons or learnings that you took along the way.
Yes, so definitely very male-dominated industry, still is. That is slowly changing.
Mm-hmm.
However, it has been a challenge as a young woman coming up through a mostly male-dominated industry, which is not a new story. The reason it's interesting is because it's just like many, many millions of other women out mm-hmm. there. Probably some of your listeners who are going through it right now. And so there has definitely been this, I'll show you, part of me, that fire.
Mm-hmm.
And I have heard many things in my career, many, many, many things that are not complimentary.
I'm sure.
That sometimes were intentional and other times, most times, were absolutely unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And things like, all the guys are going to go out and play golf. Well, I don't play golf.
Mm-hmm.
Or I don't like to play golf. I'm not very mm-hmm. good at it. So I was excluded from things like that. And do I think it was intentional to hurt my feelings? No, I do not.
Mm-hmm.
But there were lots of situations where I was not part of the club,
mm-hmm.
per se.
Yeah.
Or I was responsible for all the details of something while a guy would come in and do an overarching view of things, even though I knew all the data behind
mm-hmm.
it. And I'm not saying that I have any ill will for most of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And also, in hindsight, I can see we have to do better.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the balancing act, isn't it? I think. And like you say, sometimes, a lot of the time, it is unconscious, but it's also how can we help them reframe the narrative to think it doesn't have to be an all guys golf session. Well, you can think of something else to do. It's maybe a bit more inclusive that we also want to get involved in. Even the Monday morning coffee break chat, I think it's one of those things that I can't contribute to football. Well, I personally can't anyway.
But I got very good at looking interested.
Mm-hmm. I know, but it'd be nice to actually have a conversation where we're like, oh, isn't this great? We're all just sharing and we're all interested in the same thing. But I appreciate it. It's, that's just kind of the natural way.
Well, I think that we as a society mm-hmm. are changing and evolving and we are growing. And I think it's very easy for us to say, well, you should just include people.
Mm-hmm.
Women, include diversity, include.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yes, that is true.
Mm-hmm.
And as women and diverse folks get into boardrooms and leadership positions, they can make a real impact
yeah.
on things. And also, we have to be very, very careful of demonizing.
100%.
We have to be very careful.
Yeah.
These things do not happen because they are intentionally trying to exclude people.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed. I guess it's also just a shift in dynamics. Like you say, we boardrooms didn't really used to have women. So it's okay. We are adapting, we are changing, but I think it's more the mindful act of trying to shape those conversations, thinking about who is in the room, which not everybody can do. I appreciate that.
Everyone can't do it, but more and more people are trying.
Yeah, which is great.
And that gives me hope.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And the future generations are miles ahead, which is great. And that is something that is, yeah.
Absolutely. And it's so interesting to navigate.
Yeah.
Multi-generational. We're talking about,
oh, yeah.
We haven't been talking about like the different ages.
It's so true.
To navigate all the different generations in the workplace now, because there are many memes out there on social media. They're funny because they're largely true in many cases.
Yeah, that's true. And it's not just about kind of the male coffee chats, or the I guess it's not just, again, gender stereotype, but the different dynamics that come from what is becoming more of a progressive boardroom. But thinking about female empowerment, and I know this is something that you're passionate about, it's something I'm very passionate about. So how can we, during our careers, obviously try and create platforms to help the other women who might just be starting out in their career and think it is very intimidating to be the only female in the room? What's your thoughts there?
Well, I think when we are in leadership roles, being very intentional about the makeup of our teams, making sure that the makeup of our teams do have diversity, all ages, all races, all genders. And I say that as if it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy.
Of course.
Because there is a team dynamic, and how do you create that synergy and that right culture? Mm. So that's one thing. Another thing is, as a young, any young person, but as a young female in particular, women are very hard on each other.
Mm.
We are very hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
We are judgmental, even when we're trying not to be judgmental. The ones who struggle the most, and I'm saying this because people who are high achieving tend to lean in this direction. People who struggle the most are the ones who are alone the most. And as we get more senior in your career, there are fewer and fewer and fewer people who you feel as if mm-hmm. you can chat with and talk with. And so early on, being very intentional about having colleagues in your organization, outside of your organization, mentors, people who may be in the same spot you are, people who may be ahead of you, and then ultimately people who are behind you. Intentionally fostering that without any real expectation of something you're tangibly going to get out of it. And then the last thing that I will say, which everyone can do, I think that scarcity is something that is real in the worlds that we live in, because there are paychecks and there are business that you win or lose. There is always more opportunity.
Yeah.
Opportunity is not necessarily fair, but it is not scarce.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have the opportunity as a woman to say someone else's name in a room that matters, try to do that. So the coaches that I work with, Tracy and Kayla Hines at a company called The Inspired Lifestyle, Sandy Fiaschetti at Lodestone People Consulting, they are my coaches and they have made a difference in my life. And so when you have the opportunity to say those names, do it.
I love that. I love that. There's a real sense of camaraderie, which is nice. I think it's important across the way, right? I think also kind of the power of, like you say, it's so many executives that I work with, because obviously they are on this, as you just mentioned, you're on this path and you get to the top, and then there's a limited number of you who are in that boardroom. And then you think, oh, I can't really, well, the people in my team are maybe a bit different towards me now to what they were 10 years ago when we were working together and we were peers. Like, we can't have those conversations. So I think also kind of the power of network. And like you say, actually, even having an external coach, I know not everyone has that opportunity, but if you can, getting somebody that even you can talk to and lean on is pivotal.
You don't have to have someone who hung up a shingle and said, I'm a coach. You know who you can trust.
Mm-hmm.
Find those people and foster those relationships. It will matter to you.
And I think we touched on it at the beginning, but you as a coach, I think, like to try and shy away from the traditional dynamics of coaching yourself. But how are we, and I'm sure you do this within your teams, I'm sure you have done this as a leader, you kind of just talked about it, but from like a leadership and I am a leader, how are you kind of getting people along on the journey, or what's your kind of go-to advice to somebody? Maybe it's their first leadership role or something like that.
Sure. So there are many different avenues, but if I'm going to talk to someone who is just becoming a leader, many, many times you inherit a team. You don't get to hire your first team.
Yeah.
There will be opportunity over time to do that. Get to know your team. Find out what matters to them. Find out what their why is. Why are they working at the company with you? What do they care about? And then actively work, which means this is a lot of work for you as the leader.
Yeah.
It will naturally grow momentum and then it will mm-hmm. take off and it's going to be beautiful. Actively work to get them to work together as a team.
Mm-hmm.
I started this when I was leading a solution engineering team at a logistics company.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have a team meeting every week, and it was half the people would be in the room, half the people would be on a video call at this point in time, or a conference call mostly back then. And we would play the game of role play roulette. So, oh no, the game is role play.
Yeah.
And we would play this game. And we would start with something simple, especially if we had a new team members.
Okay.
And we would start with something simple. I'm going to get up and in 90 seconds, I'm going to tell you the story of the company that we're working for. And then we would go around the room and everybody would do their own version of it. And by the time you got back to me, I changed the version of the story. It's still the same facts, but I'm talking to a different person. I'm talking to a different team. I'm talking to someone else. And we would do this with everything. And it became fun. I know that sounds shocking. It became fun. It became like, okay, we're going to do something weird. And I'm going to pick a random slide in a deck, slide 57. And of course they pull my number to go first. And I have to do the slow walk to the front of the room as I'm trying to figure out what in the world is on this mm-hmm. slide we need to talk about. And we learned as a team, we learned so much in those sessions. Yes, we were training new employees,
mm-hmm.
for sure were, but we also were learning how to think on our feet. We were also having a little fun. We were building team camaraderie.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that that is the path for a new leader, but don't be afraid to be vulnerable with your team.
Yeah.
Have some fun. Let their personalities come out.
Yeah. And that probably leads me nicely into my next question, which is around kind of team alignment. And given this is something that you focus on at the moment, particularly within your leadership role, mm-hmm. kind of any practical strategies to navigate the team dynamics when we said at the beginning, you got two leaders, same goal, different journey. What is the best way to actually get your tea? And maybe the role play was a good example, actually, but just kind of thinking about that in terms of getting everybody on the same path. And you've talked about some kind of quite emotional strategies along the way, which actually I've talked to some leadership coaches throughout my career, and they do say the same things. They can go into some of these boardrooms of just all men, and they're all in tears by the end of it because they've got so deep and so raw in terms of the conversation that they're having, that actually, like you just mentioned there, the authenticity that comes with being an authentic lead, like the truth behind it, I think is important.
Yeah. So there's so much there to unpack. It's kind of hard to
sorry.
No, that's okay. So I think first, I want to normalize the process, an actual tangible process of going through alignment. Mm-hmm. I'm going to talk about at an executive team level because that's kind of, it's easier for me to speak about in this example, but it's anywhere. It's any team. Even if you think there is alignment, assume that there is something that is probably not 100% aligned, mm-hmm. due to we got new information, the market changed, something happened since that last conversation that I, as the leader, have assumed we're all aligned on. The last several phone calls I have gotten from leaders have been in the middle of very large technology implementations. Mm-hmm. And they have realized that there is some misalignment. There was some process that wasn't outlined properly, or some outcome that they thought everyone was talking about the same thing, but really sales and operations is talking about this, technology is talking about that. I really do want to normalize a workshop, a conversation that defines language, mm-hmm. very specifically talks about vision. Because if we're aligned on the vision, then we can quickly align on strategy. Mm-hmm. But are we really aligned on the vision? Mm-hmm. We're all going to the same zip code, but are we going to the same house address? So I want to normalize that process. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take very long, but people think, it's just extra time. No, you have to go slow so you can go fast. This will save you so much time in the end. And so there's a lot to unpack there, of course, but that's where I would want to start.
Yeah.
This should be the norm for everyone. We are blind to the words change management and strategy and vision. We're blind to it. Mm-hmm. We don't hear it. It's just assumed, of course, we're doing that. Of course we are. Okay, specifically, what did we do to do
how?
That?
Yeah.
So these are things that we all intuitively know, but we've somehow brushed over. And that is actually where I think the biggest impact can be for organizations and for mm-hmm. leaders, because you will learn things in those rooms.
Oh yeah.
Fact. Well, how do you feel about that? Well, I don't think this is going to work. Mm-hmm. What? Wait. Mm-hmm. And these are the things that really matter to an organization.
Yeah.
So we could talk about that for a while.
I'm sure we could. I'm sure we could. We actually had a leadership. We always have kind of a strategy couple of days as a team, and we all got together, and that was quite a big thing for us. Actually, we'd been through our private equity event, mm-hmm. In 2022, and I think everyone kind of felt like we were on different pages for different reasons, mainly because we hadn't talked about it. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's the communication piece and that just opening the dialogue around what is our vision and what are we planning for and what are we striving to achieve, and even that took a lot longer than I think we realized it would take just to actually get down to each individual person's thoughts and ideas, and then obviously being able to turn that into something. So it's interesting.
Absolutely. And it takes one willingness to courage to do it.
Oh, yes. It's the courage part, right?
And I don't want to make this sound big and scary, because some cultures, mm-hmm. cultures just operate like this.
Yeah.
And once you start it up, just like the role play roulette that we had, they were doing it on their own. I wasn't even in the room. A part of the culture. It just takes a minute to start it up.
Yeah. Thank you. Helpful insights. I'd love to learn a bit more around kind of your career throughout, and particularly any challenges that you've had to overcome. I think our listeners particularly learn from people when they say these are some of the difficult things that I had to go through, or some of the mistakes I had to make along the way.
Yeah. There's so many mistakes. well, let me talk about my first senior leadership role. Mm-hmm. I became a vice president of solutions, which was sales in that organization, early in my 30s. And it was a big deal at that organization to take on this role. There were no other women leaders at that level.
Mm-hmm.
And I took on a team of really experienced executive salespeople, all men, most with decades more experience than me. And I came in fiery and ready to go. And I had processes and my playbooks, and I had all my things. And I had had some success there. I've been with mm-hmm. the organization for a couple of years, probably. Then I had to get all of these folks, all of these guys, to work with me. By the way, they weren't employees. They were agents of the company. So there was more influence that was needed, as opposed mm-hmm. to, I'm your boss and this is what you're going to do. Because, of course, that's how we all act. Because that works every time, right? And that was a challenge for me as a woman in her early 30s, leading a team of gentlemen with vastly more experience and who had a lot of unconscious bias. And every single one of them had hearts of gold and were very, very good at what they did.
Mm-hmm.
But I was asking them to do things differently. I was asking them to do things that were harder than what they had been doing. Because along, the company was mm-hmm. evolving, the technology was evolving, the solutions we were providing were evolving. And so the messaging, the playbooks that this team had was starting to become out of date. The pricing mechanisms were starting to become out of date. The competitors became more competitive. And so we had to do things differently. And it was very hard for me stepping into that role, even though I had a ton of folks mm-hmm. behind the scenes rooting me on.
Yeah, of course.
And I'll tell you, I was angry a lot during those early days. This is a real look at
them.
I was angry at them. I was angry at myself. I was angry because
the emotion.
I have the answers. Why are people just not following me? Why are they not doing what they're mm-hmm. supposed to be doing? And to be fair, largely they were, but it was due to a lot of my energy being put into it to nurture it along. And I felt like it should be easier mm-hmm. because I've got the answer. This is the answer. Why aren't we doing it?
Yeah.
And I know a lot of us feel that way as we go into new roles and into new leadership positions. And here's what I did. I showed them. I helped them be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And I won them over one at a time. And it took a lot. And it took a lot of growth for me
mm-hmm.
to not just show them my way, but learn from them. Because they had a lot to teach as well.
Of course.
And if you can figure out how to create that relationship.
Yeah.
That is not just power. That is magic.
Yeah.
Because as you go through your career, you are going to very quickly find that if you are the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room.
It's true.
The people you are hiring around you will eventually have far more expertise at the different things that they are doing, the different teams that they are leading, than you do.
Yeah.
And you better hope that they have different ideas and different thoughts, because if they don't, you might be in trouble.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I feel like in that early moment, which, by the way, killed it from a sales perspective. Sold the Fortune 500 companies that we never had done before.
Love that.
It was amazing. We did amazing.
Great.
It was amazing. And also probably some of the hardest years of my life, because I was learning that skill,
yeah,
of that symbiotic relationship with people who had vastly more skill in areas, yeah, I did not. And figuring out how to bring those things together,
yeah,
made us successful.
There's always a reason why you were the part. So if that's you as your lead, there's always a reason why it was you that got that role and not them. And so I think that's worth thinking about when you do go into those experiences. I think sometimes it can be quite overwhelming, right? And you think, oh my gosh, why are they going to listen to me? How am I going to get these people along with me without feeling as though you're kind of slightly, whether it's slightly imposter syndrome or whether it's more just feeling like you haven't got the years of experience to talk about.
So when you say that, you make me think about that first big step for me.
Mm.
And it actually wasn't even that role. It was when I was becoming more cross-functional leadership. Mm-hmm. But it happens every time you level up.
Yeah.
It happens every time the role on your business card changes, or the company title changes, or if you are a founder of a company and you're recapitalizing or you're selling, you're doing, it happens every single time. I can see it everywhere. It feels different
mm-hmm.
when you are younger.
Yes.
Because you have not had the experience. And so I'm going to tell you how it feels. I'm going to tell you for the whole world. This is how it feels. Like, everyone will name it imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
And we're, yeah, we're very quiet about it, because this is not how we're supposed to feel.
Because you're like, oh gosh, did I make the right decision? Am I in the right role? Can I do this role?
Can I do this? Is this right? What are we doing? So you get the promotion, you get the new title, or you're about to. In many mm-hmm. organizations, especially high growth organizations, you kind of grow into this position and they're mm-hmm. like, oh gosh, the company's gotten bigger and you're it.
Yeah.
You're it for the next thing. And what happens is every time you're getting ready to level up, whether the title has actually appeared on your business card
mm-hmm. or not,
you start getting feedback. You start getting nitpicky feedback. And if you have an amazing leader, and in this case, I did, a gentleman who came in through a company we acquired, and he came in and he looked around and he was like, oh, you've kind of done great things. Good job. And then he started asking me questions. And he would ask me a little, he'd make a comment, hey, that proposal wasn't quite right when it went out. Did you know about that? Hey, this salesperson said this weird thing. Hey, this, hey, that. And he was on my side. He was helping. And in my mind, I'm like, well, look at all this other amazing stuff mm-hmm. that I've done. Why are you picking on me? Why are you picking on me? I'm not saying these words, but this is my mental dialogue.
Yeah.
He was trying to help me level up. He was trying to help me see that to do the next level of work, I needed different things. Most of the time, and I feel like I can speak for many, many out there, when you get to the spot, you start getting feedback that sounds like judgment and it feels like failure.
Yeah. It's the inner critic, right?
It is the inner critic. And boy, the fire starts going.
And then the clogs in the head.
And then you're angry. And then it's like, who are you really angry at? What's actually going on here? Everyone needs to know it is normal. It is normal. Lean into it. Take the advice of the people who you know have your best interest at heart. Adopt that if you think that is wise. It will pass. Everyone thinks that new promotion is just going to be butterflies and rainbows and angels singing in heaven. And it is for about 15 seconds. And then you go through this process, and on the other side of it, it's good too.
It's just the climb.
It's the climb, the change. It's leaving behind the behaviors, the title, the relationships. Sometimes your peers are now the people who work for you.
Yeah.
That's different. There's a whole change process that has to occur. And if you know that it is coming, if you know that it's coming, you will do better through it. That's why you don't hear people at a more senior level talk about that type of thing, because they know it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay, this is what I'm going to do. This is how I get through it.
Yeah.
We just don't talk about it as much. Yes, of course, that's going to happen. But as you go through that first couple of times in your career, it's kind of a giant letdown.
I earned this. Why isn't it all just easy?
This is not fun. What just happened? And just know, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And also, you're going to still be excited that you have the role. There's still going to be amazing things you can do. You're going to have to lean into it. There's all these great things that are going to happen.
Yeah.
You just have to hold both of those emotions at the same time for a little while you're figuring out what that new thing is. So that was a surprise early in my career. And I thought, let me get angry about this.
And then you get less angry as you go through the promotions.
You understand what's going to happen. And the anger goes away because you understand you're just processing this, and you're reconfiguring your work life, you're reconfiguring your relationships. This is just you getting acclimated to the space.
Yeah. Actually, a lot of leaders do say that to me, particularly if they're changing roles. I think it's like, okay, I need a good bedding in period. I need the time where I can assess and make sure that I'm ready to then be to able to actually move into the role.
Yes. And you know, because in corporate, we don't talk about feelings very much. Certainly I don't lead with that because people will run away from me screaming. And so you talk about things that are more structured. You talk about 30, 60, 90 day plan.
Yeah.
You talk about expectations exchanges. You talk about team meetings and scheduling and things that allow for some structure and some security as you are going through that process, trying to figure out what the new version of who you need to be in that role is.
Yeah, exactly. We're almost at the end, which is quite sad. Couple of questions left for you. The first one, which I always like to ask in this setting, because I think everybody has different pieces of advice, but what's the best piece of advice you've ever received in your career?
The best piece of advice I've ever received is very hard to put my finger on because I've gotten several.
Yeah.
I will do this for especially the young women out there early on in their careers. Early in my career, I was a salesperson at a logistics company in the United States. And I was, I think my leader was out on leave or something had happened. And so I was now working for several people above my leader. And so mm-hmm. I went in for my review one day and I was doing well. I wasn't worried about that, but I'm getting ready to go talk to the executive vice president, gentleman named Steve Van Kirk. He's a president of a logistics company in the US now.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think he knew who I was. I mean, he knew my name, but that was it. Certainly didn't pay attention to me. Why would he? I was off doing my thing and he was several levels up.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went through the review process and we finished up and it was fine. It was benign. And I was walking out the office and he was leaning on his office door. He said, "You know, Sophie, one more thing. You get more done in a day than anyone else on my team. But you never feel successful because your list is never done." And I thought, first, wow, that's right.
Uh-huh.
And the second thing I thought was, how in the world do you know that you're paying enough attention to me to know that? So I have never forgotten that. I have never forgotten you get mm-hmm. more done in a day than anyone else, but you never feel successful because your list is never done. And so to this day, I still struggle with celebrating. I still struggle with saying, yes, let's do a mm-hmm. visual lap. But that awareness of mm-hmm. I can't just keep adding to my list.
Yeah.
I've got to say, yes, complete. Thank you. Done. Let's do a victory lap is something that I've had to be really intentional about in my life. Mm-hmm.
Are you better now?
Oh, I think it's something that I will always have to be intentional about. Mm-hmm. I'm always like, on to the next thing. Come on. Yeah. Good job. We just sold $1 billion. Great. Next.
Don't celebrate that.
And that drive has helped me throughout my career. And
yeah.
Enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Take a pause. Rest.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that might be. And being very intentional about it for me is mm-hmm. important. And I've learned that if I bring people around me who are more conscious in that area, they help me. And it's just something that I always have to be aware of. Celebrate.
Yeah. Absolutely. Maybe it's something that was a learning that you took away, and hopefully the small wins still give you some joy along the way.
1,000,000%. It's mostly small wins. You have to find joy in everything like that.
Yes, I agree. And thinking about the future generation, that was just a piece of advice that you shared there, but for coming from yourself, particularly those who are leaders that are just navigating that path, is there any advice that you would give?
Don't isolate yourself.
Yeah.
Create a network.
Mm-hmm.
Look out, a network that helps you look mm-hmm. out.
Yeah.
It is very, very easy as a high achiever to be laser focused on whatever the goal mm-hmm. is, blocking out all the other noise. That is a superpower to be able to do that. And also it can be your Achilles heel.
Yeah.
Create a network so that you're not alone.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. One final question, because it is the Tea with TE podcast. And I know you're ready with your cup. How do you take your tea?
Well,
you can change the world.
And change the world. You can change the world. You can change the world. So in a very American fashion, this is black coffee with stevia.
Of course it is. Do you like tea?
I do like tea. I like all sorts of tea. And I thought about having my favorite weird tea to come on here with you, a milk thistle tea with grapefruit juice. But I thought,
wow. That's the first.
I told you it was unique.
That is a first. It's very unique.
Sorry to ask, are you?
Sophie, honestly, an absolute pleasure. You have some incredible leadership advice. I think you are the person that can talk to lots of different experiences that you've had throughout your career journey, but all of them kind of lead back to leadership and how well you do it. I think anybody that gets to work with you must be very lucky. And thank you very much for sharing your story.
Well, thank you for having me, Terry. I have thoroughly enjoyed getting to talk with you today.
It's been great, and hopefully see you soon.
Sounds good.